Awesome. So thanks everyone for coming out. This is Dragon Con After Dark. So as they say on My Brother and Me, the show is for kids, which I only say so that all the babies out there can know how cool they are for listening. What's up, you cool babies? So the topic of the panel is Sesta Fosta and sex work, canaries in the coal mine. I'm just going to do some brief introductions. You know, I think there's a lot of different stuff to talk about. You know, I think I'd like to leave some room open for questions at the end, but since we're the last panel of the night, no one's going to show up to kick us out. Punk rock. So just to introduce your panel, I'm Meredith Rose. I'm nominally a moderator, but I don't think you guys are going to need a whole lot of moderating, except for maybe TJ, when he gets halfway through that water bottle of vodka.
There's tonic in there, too.
Oh, well.
Welcome.
Yeah, there's like a splash on top.
Come on in.
Come on in.
Thank you.
Join the party. So I'm Meredith. I work for a group called Public Knowledge. We're a policy group in Washington, D.C. We do consumer-focused advocacy on tech policy-related issues, so you probably catch me doing a lot of copyright talk around here, as well as things like Section 230 and Sesta Fosta and net neutrality and anything you need me to stand up on a soapbox and rant about for 2 hours. That's me. And the more important folks on the panel.
You're very important.
For some value of the word important.
Moderators are very important. I'm sure we've all been to some panels that did not have good moderators that went on forever. Hello, everybody. My name is Jinx Lear. I use she, her, or they, them pronouns. I am originally based out of Philly. I'm currently, woo, hell yeah, currently relocating to Long Beach. And no woos for that. It's all right. Long Beach doesn't need your woos. Philly does. I am so honored to be here and actually be invited this year. I crashed this panel last year. And by crashed, I mean I raised my hand politely halfway through and I said, hey, I can't help but notice there's no sex workers on your sex worker panel. And Scott and TJ and Meredith, to their great credit, were like, there is a seat though. So I'm slightly more prepared this year and not in cosplay, which is good. So I am a sex worker. I'm a story development editor. But most of why I'm here right now is you're like, well, this is who I work for. I work for nobody. I work for no man and every man who wants to hire me. Also people of other genders. I'm a full service sex worker. I started off as a stripper. I'm not a stripper anymore. If you need to know what full service means, look it up. I do what most people think that I do when I say that I'm a sex worker. And I love talking about sex work and policy and sex work and pop culture. I'm really involved in the Game of Thrones fandom, which is how I ended up here. And I have been talking for a long time, so I would actually really love to hear what Natalie has to say.
I am much less interesting than you, I promise. My name is Natalie Zena Walshots. I am a game developer.
I'm sorry, did you just say Zena Walshots?
Yeah, they didn't have quite enough room on here, but
that part is important. Thank you for bringing it up.
My actually from birth earth name is Zena, so I'm very excited about that. Thank you. Thank you very much. I feel very at home here. I'm a game developer. I make a lot of different... Thank you. It sounds a lot cooler than it is.
Y'all are a great audience.
Yeah, this is great.
It's like 10 p.m. You're like, woo! And like everything we say. Thank you.
I'm not the only one with a water bottle full of vodka.
Shockingly, I'm actually sober, but that's only because I'm old and would fall asleep. I just need to get through this panel and then it will all be downhill from here. Yeah, woo, team old. And some of the games that I work on, in particular, a game that I was working on during my PhD, which I definitely quit partway through, was a game called The Oldest Game, which was a game about changes to sex work law in Canada that was taking place in 2014. The pre-existing laws were repealed. The government sort of had a year to make up new ones, which they did very badly. you know, sort of exist for us in the form of Bill C-31. We've been living with him for about 5 years now. So my sort of place on this panel, I guess, is to offer that perspective. They're not as terrible as Sesta Fosta, but in a lot of ways they parallel the sort of like missing the mark that a lot of the current laws do. So I'm here to kind of, I think, offer that perspective as like somebody who's studied that and worked with that. And also, yeah, talk about like the narrative of sex work as well, sort of as it's portrayed in media in ways that are garbage. So that's me. TJ.
My name's TJ Myhill, and I recognize I am the old white guy in the end, and not a single person in this room came to hear what I had to say. But
Let's get some claps for that realism. Let's get some claps for white guys realizing that they don't need to be talking literally all the time.
I'm a lawyer here in Atlanta, and I'm here to provide the legal analysis and answer any legal questions or cover any legal points that we need to cover for our topic about the laws. But obviously the idea of the canary in the coal mine is to talk about the sex worker experience, and my book learning has nothing to do with that. So
he's just here for eye candy. Look at that. look at that outfit.
That specimen.
I mean also voice candy, let's be real.
I would like to point out though that last year we had a number of questions that were from people also in the industry. I want to point out that we are recording, but that the camera is only showing us.
Okay, our ugly mugs. So as long
free.
As you don't step in front of that camera, and I would like to leave time for questions if possible.
So do feel free to be open in your questions. Your voice will be recorded, but your image will not, as long as you don't walk by the camera.
Also, if you like really want to write a question or something, you can totally hook that up. I've got a bunch of friends in the first lane who would be down to help you with that if you don't want to have your voice on.
No, I think it's good to be recorded, but I just want to make sure that the audience knows. I mean, just
so in case somebody's like, greetings, my name is Jane Smith, and I am a full-service sex worker.
And here's my social security number.
this does get uploaded eventually.
I currently reside at the following address.
Yeah, so.
Cool. Okay, so just some background. So I'm going to get my bit out of the way as the policy and politics person because it is context that is useful but not critical. The way we got to Sesta Fosta. So Sesta Fosta comes in the context of this long and ongoing debate, which has been reinvigorated if you've had your eyeballs trained anywhere remotely near a news source. About a provision of the law, it's called Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. Communications Decency Act was an attempt by the Clinton administration to basically keep porn offline. And Janet Reno,
it failed.
You know, good game, didn't work. It was, by good game, I mean literally the entire law got struck down except for one provision. And that one in Reno v. ACLU. And the one provision was Section 230. Now, Section 230, authored by Ron Wyden, if any of y'all are Oregons, snaps for Ron Wyden, I love him, sorry, tech nerd. So Section 230 came about because there was a period in law about in which courts were trying to deal with, how do we deal with First Amendment claims and things like defamation when we're talking about online platforms? So at this point, we're talking like BBS message boards. Okay, this is like the 80s, early 90s. And the cases kind of went two different ways. So there was a line of cases that said, well, you know, one of them involved CompuServe, if anyone remembers that. Yeah, that's where we're going in the history. We're going to CompuServe. One of them involves CompuServe, and basically, I think anyway, two cases. One of them said, like, well, a platform is really just, like, this bulletin board service. They don't really do anything. They're just kind of this neutral repository for other people's speech. So you can't hold the bulletin board liable if someone posts like defamation on your service. The other line of cases said, "Now this bulletin board system kind of looks a lot like a newspaper, so we're going to hold it just as liable as a newspaper." That's where the line of the divergence came, and you know the nascent internet rightly freaked the fuck out because that could potentially upend everything. And so Section 230 essentially provides, look. If you are an online platform, and I am grossly paraphrasing here, But for all intents and purposes, if you're an online platform, you accept user-generated content, you are not liable for the content of whatever your users post on you within certain boundaries. So it doesn't apply to copyright infringement, because copyright is super special and it gets its own laws. I say this with every ounce of sarcasm in my body. Fucking Mickey Mouse gets a carve out from this and no one else does. So it doesn't apply to copyright, and it doesn't apply to like certain other kinds of like criminal activity. So things like you can't sell drugs on a website, like the website needs to take that stuff down. The end result is that Section 230 has on the one hand allowed for this sort of wild flourishing of the internet as we know it, where you have this proliferation of websites that accept all kinds of user-generated content. On the other hand, it has caused, you know, Nazis on Twitter, arguably. And so that's where the debate is mostly centered around right now. One of the first attempts that really succeeded in whittling down the scope of Section 230 was SESTA-FOSTA. And SESTA-FOSTA essentially said, well, yeah, so you're not liable for what people post on your website or your platform, except if it is used to facilitate or enable human trafficking. Define facilitate or enable. Gmail could be liable. Yahoo Mail could be liable, because presumably a sex worker somewhere uses a Gmail account. Or prostitution. Because if there's one thing the law loves doing, it's conflating sex working and prostitution. And so...
Sex trafficking. Sex work and prostitution are the same thing.
Correct.
Sometimes. It's an umbrella term. We'll get there.
I'm very sleepy. So yeah, it's essentially kind of created this dumpster fire where, to put it mildly, where the end result of which is that services have overcorrected. And so you had Craigslist shutting down their personal section, saying like, well, I don't know, there might be something in here that we could be liable for under SESTA-FOSTA, so we're just going to throw the whole thing out.
Can I speak to this real quick?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, sorry, just going to speak out of turn. Just so that you understand that this isn't just related to the internet. There is, and of course, historical precedent for saying, especially with related to sexuality, like, what was the, is it Comstock? The, like, the pornography, but I don't know porno, or I don't, what
I
is it?
I
can't define pornography,
it.
But I know it when I see it. Thank you for waiting for me to get that out. It is defined in a really similar way, and it doesn't just work like this with the internet. It works like this with real life, too. So, like, if I get a ride to work from a friend who owns her car, that person giving me a ride to work can be considered facilitating trafficking. Me going to work, I can be charged with trafficking myself. So let that one like sink in for a second. Hello and welcome, new people. We love you. Thank you so much for showing up. Oh my God, I love your giant boombox. I'm way too easy to distract. So I just want to like put that perspective out there, is like landlords, people who help us, you know, friends who help us get places. God forbid you cross a state line while you're doing that. Like all of those can be considered facilitating trafficking. So the point of this is to be like, well, if we just define it loosely enough, then anything on the internet can now be also facilitating trafficking. So, and in case you didn't know, SESTA and FOSTA, those acronyms are, it's about ending sex trafficking. Like that's the ST in there. And so
the FOSTA is Fighting Online Sex Trafficking Act. Right. It's really redundant.
Then the other one is Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking Act. Yeah.
Okay. Bit of DC inside baseball. Legislators get into serious slap fights about who gets to name the bill. And who gets to pick their acronym? This is like the dumbest thing you will ever have to deal with as a lobbyist.
Well, Meredith, tell us why it matters what these things are called. Like, why does it matter that it's called?
Oh, I mean, because
sex trafficking.
Because it's all PR. You know, if you were up on the Hill dealing with any of the multitude of bills following the auto industry bailout, so circa your rewind to like immediately post 2008 election, so like early 2009. I swear to God, one out of every three bills that was introduced was the, mostly from the Republicans, were the stopping the job-killing, anti-American, communist auto industry bailout. I'm not making this up. No. The word job-killing came up in probably one out of every three or four bills that was introduced for like a solid three-month period.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's all theater.
This is absolutely because now you can go to your senator, right, and say, well, so wait, so you're for sex trafficking because you voted against the SESTA or FOSTA bill? No, you have to name the bill something like guaranteed to give rays of sunshine out your butt bill, or everyone's grandma's house will catch on fire if you don't vote for this bill.
Right, because then you're a monster if you critique it.
No one can possibly vote against it. Yep. You're absolutely a monster. So yeah. we create these bills so that we say, oh, we're fighting sex trafficking. No one likes sex trafficking. Are you in favor of sex slavery? No, you can't possibly be. So you must vote for my bill, even though my bill is asinine.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Okay, so do we want to... with that note,
point
it's
made.
All fucked. that is, if you take away anything from basically any EFF panels over this Dragon Con, we're all doomed.
It's okay. I have action steps at the end, you guys.
Nice. Then you're like 20 times more prepared than I am. So you want to... Why don't we go to how this has affected people on the ground?
I would actually really love to hear from Natalie about the impact of this, because the intention, I can speak a little bit to like, is this helping with sex trafficking? And the answer is absolutely fucking not. But I think it's really interesting that the intention, the ostensible intention is we're ending sex trafficking. So if we're going to get a little bit deeper and be a little bit more real, what are we really dealing with is kinds of sex that make people really uncomfortable. So like when things like Tumblr changing its terms of service happens, that is in theory, that is to keep the sex trafficking from happening. I have never posted an ad on Tumblr. Let me tell you, maybe somebody has. It's a free service. I won't assume. But like Tumblr changing its TOS means that this company is now in charge of what is art versus what is porn. Like what does it mean? This is a paradigm shift that we should all be concerned about. And that's why this panel is called The Canaries in the Coal Mine. What does it mean when sex workers are the first front of this thing that is changing the way the internet works fundamentally? Because if people who are sexual minorities and people who are marginalized in other ways, if our sexualities are being told that they're always explicit, like if you, try to find gay shit on Tumblr now. Like, you still can, but like when I go to tag on Instagram, like you can't use a bunch of things. You can't use hashtag lingerie on Instagram any longer. And you can't use a bunch of things that are like femme for femme, and like other sexual minority people are getting locked out of being able to use the internet from this. So I want to hear more about that.
Absolutely. Incidentally, I and several other people in this room are on the Tumblr panel that will be taking place in, I believe, exactly this room tomorrow night, about how laws like this have screwed everything for everybody. Incidentally, also, fan fiction communities get like completely thrown under the bus by exactly the same kinds of things, because fan fiction exists kind of in that intersection of like sex and copyright, right? So there's this like, great intersection, except, yeah, an amazing, beautiful intersection that I love that unfortunately gets an entire art form kind of crapped on. So to be clear, Bill C-31 is way less terrible than SESTA-FOSTA. Despite that, there are very clear, obvious to anybody, you know, with any brain or empathy, consequences on the lives of sex workers that we're really seeing now, as you know, 4 years later, that was indeed being called out immediately, but like that we're really now seeing 5 years later after the bill has sort of been introduced and taken root a bit. So in the way that the old law worked, and the reason it was struck down constitutionally, like the reason that the law had to be repealed is Sex Workers and Allies launched a constitutional challenge saying that this is actually against the Constitution of Canada, in particular the provision that stated it was illegal to live off the avails of sex work, right? Which is very similar to, you know, what you were saying, that if it, you know, it wasn't, it was not illegal to be a sex worker, but like any,
rent.
It's illegal to pay your rent. It's illegal to earn that rent, right? It's illegal to you know, to do anything. So, That was sort of made up the main basis of the challenge that was successful. At the end of the year, the legislation that was, you know, reintroduced was like, well, okay, you, the individual, are allowed to live off of those provisions. Okay. However, the scope of what was criminalized kind of surrounding sex work and sex workers expanded quite a bit. So it became illegal to hire a bodyguard, hire a driver. You know, again, your landlord became implicated. So like if you discovered that, or like, you know, whereas previously you might have had a very friendly relationship with your landlord, now if they continued to rent to you, they were at risk because they were profiting off of the avails of sex work. This made it impossible to safely rent a hotel room, things like this. So they're, you know, the constitutional challenges are extremely expensive. They take a very long time. There is a lot of hope that another one will be launched eventually, with the data that we're starting to gather right now that shows that, in fact, sex workers are much less safe than they were before. A lot of the, the rhetoric that came up around the bill in particular had to do with like, well, you don't want anybody else profiting off the avails of sex work because those are pimps, right? Like, that's the only sort of human being that like legislators could imagine possibly being able to like, you know, have any kind of positive relationship with, you know, earning money via sex work, when actually it's like all of these apparatuses that were in fact working to keep people safe. Now we're seeing them fall away, and we're seeing a lot of people who were, you know, active as allies no longer being able to like do that work. It's like, I would love to take your money. I would love to be able to work with you. But, you know, a lot of people are moving out of those lines of work because of that, by which I mean like bodyguards and like drivers and like, you know, other people providing safety and security.
Jeez, yeah. Can I jump in and talk about the challenge? So, on the subject of challenges, there was a challenge to SESTA FOSTA. EFF did raise a lawsuit trying to challenge the constitutionality and all of the various issues that was coming along with SESTA FOSTA. Unfortunately, that lawsuit was dismissed not for any substantive grounds. It didn't have any decision about whether or not SESTA FOSTA was actually good or appropriate or doing what it was supposed to do. It was dismissed for standing. What standing is a question of whether or not I have the right to sue you. I don't have the right to bring claims for someone else. I can't bring Natalie's claims. I have to bring my own claims. And so the plaintiffs in that case were deemed to not have standing to challenge SESTA FOSTA, and the lawsuit was dismissed without anyone actually having to think about whether or not the law was good. So the law, while the challenges are there and we're trying to bring them and the work is in progress, unfortunately, the first door was shut, not on any decision that SESTA or FOSTA is good or bad, but just on technicality grounds. And so while those challenges are trying to be brought, and while we are trying to continue to pursue claims that will try to create ultimately good law, litigation sucks.
Yeah, I think
so. So, just a quick question, like to that. So, does that mean that in order for the suit to be considered, or to like for standing to be considered, it would have to be brought by sex workers?
Well, that'd be one way. I mean,
right, sure.
Ultimately, right. That's the challenge for those of you who were here last year. Mm-hmm. The challenge that we have in, and I know Jinx, you and I disagreed on this a little bit, but you know, I'm gonna open it up again so we can have a nice hearty debate. The challenge that we have is that we're saying that your law that is supposed to stop sex trafficking or, you know, prevent sex slavery or stop children getting into, is not doing any of that. And it's not, objectively. It's just not. But what it is doing is it's creating more hardships on legitimate sex workers, and it's creating problems for them, and it's making it harder for them to do their job, and it's making them go back into streets and back into situations that are not positive, because no senator, nor no congressman, no police officer gives a shit that we're making some other illegal activity harder. And what we have is a situation where we're saying that you're not stopping this actual illegal activity, but you're also making this other, what ought not to be, but still is, illegal activity. There's my libertarian point, Meredith. You're ready for it. What ought not to be, but still is, illegal activity harder. Because making it harder on other criminals is not anything that even older, whiter guys than me care about. And that's the challenge that we have. It's hard to create a situation where we can make people concerned about the outcome of Sesta Fosta until we can make people concerned about whether or not we're doing the right thing by criminalizing human behavior.
And that's hard because a lot of times what I hear from people is like, oh, it really took a conversation with a sex worker to understand that, like, you're people. And I'm like, okay, first of all, ew. But... they don't understand that that's how clear they're making it, but that's how it sounds sometimes. But it, you know, it takes somebody being like, you know, I'm Jinx and I'm a sex worker. And I'm an incredibly privileged sex worker. And I want to take a second to name that and like how that is relevant to my experience. That doesn't mean that I've never experienced violence as a result of the job that I do, but being a white college educated cisgender, so not being transgender, cisgender worker has protected me, continues to protect me in a lot of ways. And it also protects me in rooms like this when I'm sitting up at a table full of other white people trying to talk to y'all about stuff that is primarily affecting people who don't necessarily look like me. Like, I have been able to continue working while this is happening. And I continue to be involved in activism because I have the privilege to be able to have people fucking listen to me when I talk. But the people who are being most affected by this are not people who feel comfortable coming forward to say, hey, I'm a sex worker, because there is so much other shit going on in their life. If you have a kid, your child can be taken away from you. If you are an educator, you can lose your fucking job if you have any kind of licensure. So if you don't have the ability to do other kinds of work, to choose other kinds of work, then like you're really, your back's up against the wall, especially if you're somebody who is from a group of people who has always had the police up your ass, who has always had people like the state looking for you to do something wrong. So if there is now this thing that we are defining very loosely, and it will be applied to whoever the government, whoever the police decides to apply it to, who do you think is going to be affected the most by this? So anti-trafficking laws are actually like pretty commonly used in a similar way to drug laws in order to put black and brown people in prison. And this needs to be seen as part of that. This needs to be seen as like a racial justice issue, a class issue, a social justice issue in general. But like, there needs to be people of color who are in talk. Like, this is, there was almost a cop on this panel, and I'm really glad there's not a cop on this panel, but this is still not representative. are you the cop? No, I'm so sorry. That was a really terrible accusation. I saw you wave when I said the cop thing. I'm so sorry.
The way that laugh cut out was perfect.
So I just feel like all of that is like really important to name, and I am not the right person to speak to what the experiences of street-based workers as a result of SESTA has been, but that is critical to how this is happening, because Backpage, raise your hand if you've ever heard of Backpage. Okay, so Backpage was a website where you could put up an ad for free or cheap, depending on how, like, what time you got in on it. And it was really accessible to people who would otherwise be working on the street. And that is one of a number of resources that people could use in order to contact folks so that they didn't have to be on the stroll. And there's other things that people use that I don't want to mention by name because they kind of come and go as far as apps, but like that we use as screening tools. And all of these are important. And one day, if you open your iPad or your your phone or your whatever, and that screening tool is not there anymore because that host has decided that it's too dangerous to host the to have that information present, then you are not making as educated a decision, and you could be entering a violent situation even that another worker has warned people about. So, like, when you ask, okay, well, how much is changing hosts or changing the rules that apply to hosts actually going to affect individuals on, like, a day-to-day basis? I am telling you that since this law has been enacted, people have starved. They have missed medication that they needed. They have lost their homes. I have seen community members commit suicide because they just truly do not understand how they're going to make shit work anymore. Like, those are the consequences that we're talking about. So when we're discussing these things, we need to remember that A, it's affecting different people differently, and B, that it is affecting some of those people in ways that are literally life or death. So, like, that, I think if you see frustration from sex workers online when we talk about this stuff, it's because we desperately need allies and we're really tired of screaming into the void. So to see this room be, like, almost, like, I keep, like, tearing up a little when, like, more people come in. So I just want to say thank you all so much for being here. This is not over yet. Don't leave. But, but I, you know, it's just really meaningful that you're here. We know that SESA isn't working because there is evidence that the people who are being charged with the actual, like, trafficking Backpage. And the FBI just released a bunch of documents that prove... Yeah. There's a really amazing Elizabeth Nolan Brown article on this on Reason.com. Let me see. I know I have it up, so you can look it up. It's called Secret Memos Show the Government Has Been Lying About Backpage All Along. Yeah. And there has been documents released that prove that when police departments hit up Backpage, that not only would they respond really fast to be like, oh my God, we are so sorry, this does look incredibly alarming, they would actually send ads that people were submitting to Backpage to be like, hey, this looks like this might be trafficking. Like, police, you might want to look into this. Like, they have been cooperating with the police to such a degree that this case is fucking falling apart. Like, they cannot move forward with prosecuting Backpage because there is so goddamn much evidence that Backpage and other sex working websites have always been on the front lines of trying to end trafficking. So that's just really embarrassing. And it makes it clear that no matter what people say, this is about hurting sex workers. This is about limiting freedom. And ultimately, this is about limiting the freedom of sexual minorities in digital space in general. And that is going to apply to other people. And we should be very concerned that Nazis have free speech rights and sex workers don't. Because what happens to the canaries in the coal mine, y'all? Like, that is a grim-ass name for this workshop.
But that's exactly right. I mean, the truth is, that I said earlier that it's an asinine law and that it's not working. But it's not just not working. It's doing the opposite.
The opposite working.
It's really not working. So what we have is a situation where before you had third parties that were participating in investigations. You had websites where information was available. Investigators could get screenshots. Investigators could get data. If nothing else, I could be on Backpages or Craigslist or whatever and say, hey, wait a minute, I recognize that person. That person's the one who's missing from my neighborhood. I just saw their face on the milk carton. Well, now I can't do that anymore because it's gone. So that access of saying, I'm going to report a crime, or I'm going to notify someone, or I'm going to have evidence, the investigators have evidence, all that is gone. All it's done is made it harder. Well, it's made it harder for people like Jinx to do their legitimate job. Again, legitimate not being something the law agrees with, but the in terms of actually fighting online sex trafficking or stopping enabling sex trafficking, it has done the absolute opposite.
It has made it
easier to traffic because the evidence of that trafficking is now non-existent instead of right there to be screenshotted.
So I want to take a minute to piggyback on this and talk about the failure in the policy space that led to this law. There's a couple of different things at work here. One is there has been something called the Tech Lash, which if you're interested on it, you should come shoot the panel about it, which I think is Sunday? Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Come and talk about Tech Lash. Tech Lash is a generic term for everyone's mad at big tech companies for some reasons that are totally, extremely fucking legitimate, and some of them that are not terribly fucking legitimate. And there's a million reasons for this. Largely, just as a society, there's been so much new capacity for communication that we haven't sort of socially figured out how we want to deal with it. And so when things change very fast, people lash out at it. You know, at the same time, there are Nazis on Twitter. I'm not going to defend Jack on that one. You know, tech policy was really, honest to God, caught flat-footed, I think, by SestaFosta. I think this was, you know, there were groups like EFF, who's based in San Francisco. They have worked much more closely with, like, sex worker advocates than, you know, my employer, Public Knowledge. We're strictly inside the Beltway group. We're not a membership group. We are funded almost exclusively through like grants and like nonprofit grants. We're a 501c3. And we all just kind of looked at each other and we're like, well, this is a bad bill. And there was just no systemic effort to reach out and talk to sex workers about this. It was just a complete failure of organization within DC. Because I think no one, honest to God, no one thought of sex workers as a constituency, like, and that's a systemic problem in Washington. You know, part of that is first you have to get senators to think of sex workers as a constituency, and you're going to have some hits and some misses on that one, and probably a lot more misses than hits. You know, but this bill got through, and everyone just kind of was looking at each other like, well, what the fuck do we do now? So I think this is one of the biggest systemic failures within the tech policy community, was not managing to stop this bill in its tracks when there were so many voices screaming about it, and we just didn't hear them and didn't look out to listen to them. You know, so I'm happy to nerd out about the policy and politics of it, but like it was genuinely like a deflating, awful, I think, one of the nadirs of tech policy organizing in DC.
Well, it really it's surprising to me that the tech companies didn't fight this harder, because the reason y'all are the canaries is that you're the first bite. But the reality is that this is chopping away at the internet freedoms. What we have is a situation now where the internet as we know it would not exist if
You can come in, or you can stay out. Just pick one. Close the door. Thank you.
One way or the other. My mic isn't that loud. The internet as we know it wouldn't exist if companies weren't, if hosts weren't liable for the information that people put on them, right? If websites could be held completely liable for all the stuff that people put on it, whether it's infringing, copyright infringing, trademark infringing, defaming, whatever, no one would allow any user to post any content because it's just too risky. Mm-hmm. This similar topic will be discussed in our EU panel that I'm going to talk about later.
This also comes in the context, and you know, okay, so my other, about 90% of my day job has dealt with copyright policy. Some of the biggest supporters of SestaFosta were the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because they have been, since really the dawn of the internet, the modern internet as we know it, they have taken issue with the idea that tech companies are not as liable as they would like them to be for copyright infringement. And there is to call this like, you know, Hatfields and the McCoys would be an understatement of the century between tech and content. And it was, you know, you just look, if you see, pro tip, if you ever see Oracle, someone got where I was going with this. If you ever see the tech company Oracle weighing in on something, it's deliberately designed to be stabbing at Google. Oracle has exactly one policy goal, and that's to fuck Google. Oracle, who has fuck all to do with anything about SestaFosta, came out in full-throated support of this bill because it was going to fuck with Google. Right. It is middle school level mudslinging on some of these issues. This was seen in DC, admittedly, as an opening volley to start chipping away at this sort of fundamental structure of the internet, which in the minds of content companies like the RIAA or the MPAA, like, you know, in their mind allows tech companies to basically do whatever they want with impunity and said, no, we're going to rein you in. We are going to hold you responsible for everything that we see is wrong with your business model right now. And so Sesta Fosta was full-throated endorsement from all the major content industries. Keep your eye out. If you see Google or if you see Oracle releasing a press release, there's like a 90% chance it is trying to fuck with Google.
And like, what is their main like gig? Like, what do they do mostly? Like data management,
fuck
right?
Google.
Oh, Oracle?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they advertise in Iron Man movies.
But as far as data management, I want to say that something else that's really alarming as far as being a sex worker on the internet is facial recognition software. And I was about to say there's a contract in there somewhere.
God.
I know for a fact that I'm on lists as a result of having. So you know this is so ridiculous. So to submit an ad, I have to take a photo of myself with a recent newspaper, with like the day's newspaper, and my unmade up face holding my ID. Like, that's not a thing that people do with, like, a gun held to their head. I'm
where
like,
the hell do you even find a newspaper now?
This is actually so much more like being kidnapped.
is this an ad or is this proof of life?
Man, I had to do that when I was claiming my Google page recently. They're like, ooh. You need to take, in order to, like, if you're a person on the internet with any kind of, like Google has one of those, like, random kind of entries.
To claim my Google
page. Claim your Google page because, like, if you're like, hey, that's me, I'd like to kind of, like, announce that I'm the, and I should control this. They're like, okay, cool. So we need a photo of you with the date and your identification. Yeah. A photo that you took today.
It's seriously, what point does it become spooky. Mail us the end of your pinky finger?
I mean, right? Feels like that. I mean, you should see how expensive it is to post an ad in LA. That's all I'm going to say. I would give up a pinky finger. So I want to open it to questions in a second, but real quick, just so that we don't end up missing this part, I wanted to go through a little list that I put together of like how you can be a better ally to sex workers, because I know it can be like really a fucking bummer to come to a panel at 10 o'clock at night and have us just be like, shit's fucked.
This is why we drink on these panels.
Yes, drink. I'm definitely not really high. I'm not. I was ready for this panel. If anybody would like to smoke with
glasses,
me after. Yeah, you can tell I'm serious because I'm wearing my glasses over my fake lashes.
Oh, well, shit, okay. I put my contacts in.
So the first thing that I want to say is, like, hire us, pay us, tip us. Like, it's super straightforward. If there's somebody whose stuff you're, like, jerking it to on Instagram on a regular basis, although, let's be real, it's probably not on Instagram any longer because you know how the Zuck feels about nipples.
Mine
there
are fine.
Better not be any fucking
female
nipples around here.
Yeah,
it's weird, right?
Nipples.
Nobody wants to see mine. But they're fine.
So yeah, hire a sex worker, hire a full service sex worker, pay a porn star, sign up for somebody's OnlyFans until before they kick us off OnlyFans. They're kicking the whores off OnlyFans. We'll see how long mine lasts. Be proactive about inviting us to stuff. I was really honored to be invited to this table last year. I was really honored to be invited to this table even more on purpose this year. Reach out to us because we don't know how you feel about sex workers. We're assuming that, like almost everybody else in the world, you're like pretty antagonistic towards us. So like, if you actually give a shit about our opinion, like let us know because we will be stoked to share it more likely than not. Do recognize that there's reasons why like, filming can be complicated for us. Do you say, like, you know, how can I be supportive of your privacy if you want to do this? Never out people if you know a sex worker's birth name. If you say it backwards, we get sucked back to the planet from whence we came. So you can't do that. I'm like Alex Trebek. So don't invite the police. Fuck the police, literally, always. We'll talk about this later, but please don't invite the police. Question what you hear about trafficking when you go to In-N-Out and there's like a paper thing on your tray that's like, did you know one in every four children is trafficked? Where are you getting these statistics? Like, when you read stuff about trafficking, and especially if they call it like modern slavery,
oh my God,
be incredibly suspicious of what you're seeing. A lot of those like nonprofit organizations are basically just like ways for rich, angry old white ladies to like make a lot of money using stock photography of scary brown people like in an alleyway. Like, this is they're a disaster. Actually, look up your trafficking orgs to see if they're doing anything helpful, because more likely than not, they're not. Yeah, fuck the police. Hold your fandom creators accountable. If you're like, oh my fucking God, I love this show, and then suddenly they have like a sex worker character who's like diseased and depressed and just needs to be saved and blah, 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 blah.
Or murdered.
Stop murdering sex workers. Yeah, so if you're seeing people get like murdered as sex workers on your favorite fan shit, be like, why? Like, write a letter, write an email, tweet at them and be like, this is really unnecessary and also very unoriginal. So yeah, write better shit and support better shit, because sex workers make media too. A lot of us have podcasts. I don't have a podcast right now, but you can come up and grab one of my business cards after this. There's a really cool comic coming out called Safe Sex by Tina Horn. Woo! You knew what I was talking about. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So it's going to be amazing. And she is a former sex worker, current sex professional. And I think you should definitely, definitely check it out. Demand a stance on decrim from your elected officials. Like, don't just be like, oh, like, well, but like, show up to town halls and be like, sex work decrim, go, and watch their faces like,
a what?
Yeah, and then they're gonna have to have like a policy person be like, hey, you need to be more ready for that question next time, and they should be ready for that question. Bernie voted for FOSTA. I will die on this hill. Please,
Kamala
please.
Harris wrote FOSTA.
Harris wrote FOSTA. Kamala Harris spearheaded the anti-backpage shenanigans. So, like, I believe in their capacity for change. I want to believe in the potential for a more progressive movement. Just demand, because they don't think anybody other than sex workers gives a shit. And a lot of us are too scared to show up to stuff with our real-ass faces and be like, hello, I, somebody who sucks dick for money, would like to know how you feel about that.
Well,
it's a vulnerable position,
y'all.
Again, Jinx, I'm going to disagree just slightly, because I'm a cynical son of a bitch, and I don't believe that any people who are sitting there right now have any interest in change. So I would say... Hang on, I'm going to get... Hey, Meredith, guess what TJ is going to say now?
What is it,
TJ? I'm going to say the thing I say at every fucking panel for the last 15 years, which is you have got to do your job and go vote.
I'm not anti-voting.
No, I know you. I'm just saying.
I don't think
we're going to change Bernie Sanders' mind is all I'm saying. I think Bernie's probably figured out what he thinks about sex work. But... what we need to do is make sure that we get people who understand technology, who understand the fact that this, why is this fucking illegal?
Why are we
still talking about
this?
I don't understand why we're having this conversation. I can buy anything I want except Jinx.
Okay.
Okay.
Real talk?
Of all, you're
why
being
is that?
Such a man
I don't
slashing
understand.
Your hand on the table right now. Oh my God.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So real talk. For those of you who are armchair activists, and I count myself in this occasionally,
it's because the best place to do activism.
It is, because I also do activism in my day job. When I get home, I'm tired, and I like to sit on my couch. No, in all seriousness, especially if you have not been plugged into the discourse around sex work, plug into it.
Yeah.
It costs you nothing.
Follow us on Twitter. Sometimes there's titties also.
It costs you nothing. I will say that is a highlight of my day. When all of a sudden, I have two monitors at work. One of them is just TweetDeck, and occasionally it's just titties. Luckily, my boss does not walk by when that happens. Scroll. Yeah, no, seriously, plug into it. There are tons of folks who are talking about this. I mean, obviously follow Jinx. Elizabeth Nolan Brown writes for Reason. She has been, like, one of the big journalists covering this. She's also just, like, the take-a-no-shit
like
libertarian.
The, literally, like, her beat is anti-trafficking. And yeah. She comes at it from a perspective of actually knowing what the hell she's talking about. Right. So I really recommend Elizabeth Nolan Brown's writing.
SWOP?
Swap. Yes. Swap. Sex Workers Outreach Project, also Survivors Against SESTA. It's an organization that's now been sundowned,
yeah.
But the resources are still up there. And that's actually a really amazing example of sex workers and our allies mobilizing really quickly in response to stuff, even though the tech industry could have been a lot more helpful.
Yeah.
Let's take some questions.
Questions? Mm.
Nope. Okay, I want to...
Hands up in the front.
We got one up here.
I want to... You can go second. I saw you.
Oh.
So, Jinx, you obviously brought up. Oh, it has a mic.
Oh yes, you talk into
the
box.
That's why you have a box. We don't enjoy you
speak into the box.
You obviously briefly spoke about Tumblr ban, as well as facial recognition software. So I was wondering if you guys just in general could expand on the policy ramifications and the social ramifications of social media algorithms, just in general, in regards to sex work, in regards to sex.
That should be a whole panel.
Yeah. I know. And I'm going to miss the Tumblr one tomorrow, so.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go. That's, tomorrow.
That should be a panel with sex workers on it,
buzzwords.
No, in all seriousness, like, it's, yeah, so a lot of what has happened is we talk about the difference between the law and then what practically ends up being the law. Like copyright fair use, there's a definition in the statute. What really matters for a lot of people is how YouTube think fair use works.
They're wrong, by the way.
Oh, they're wildly
no, they're
wrong.
No, their bizarre AI algorithm is wrong.
Correct. Yeah.
And so we have tried to automate, and by we, I mean folks who run platforms. I do not run a platform. Please do not ask me to post your stuff. So in reality, you have things like the Tumblr algorithm trying to identify female presenting nipples, and that's when you ended up with the Too Sexy for Tumblr tag, which was just chef's kiss. It was, like, some of the best content. I have a friend who teaches design patent law, and there were literally design patent application drawings of, like, bunny slippers, and they got flagged by the Tumblr algorithm. And so
I'm
she has an...
Too sexy for Tumblr.
Tumblr. Too sexy for my dash. Too sexy. I think you're totally right. Algorithms have... We have outsourced the law to algorithms, like, in a lot of cases. This is becoming a problem for a lot of very obvious reasons. You can talk about... and the problem is we all kind of look at... if you look at platforms like Facebook and Twitter, they have had a little bit of a longer track record of dealing with things that are explicitly terroristic speech. And that's a very narrow subset with a relatively well-defined vocabulary. And so people look at that and they're like, oh, well, they keep jihadists off of Twitter, so they should be able to do all this other stuff, just like tweak the algorithm a little bit. But like, it doesn't work that way. There's actually a really interesting story where they kind of tried to do it with white supremacist speech, and they found out that they inadvertently banhammered a bunch of Republican politicians if they did it.
How curious.
Yeah, well, whether that's a bug or a feature depends on who you ask.
Okay. I want to add, like, one tiny thing to that in terms of, like, the ramifications that we see. Because in Canada, in particular in the city of Toronto, but in Canada, we had, like, a really, untechified ramification that literally nobody expected, and then of course, you know, legislators were totally willing to have this, like, thrown under the bus as a result. But there were a lot of small newspapers. Remember those? Print, right? A thing.
Yep.
There were a lot of right. No.
Right,
yeah, exactly. The thing you use with the date on it to identify yourself. Or, you know, clean with it, whatever. There were a lot of small publications, weeklies, monthlies, arts publications. Particularly in Toronto, but I'm sure all over the place, that basically survived taking ads, like advertising for sex workers.
Where the name Backpage comes from.
Right, literally the
back
with
their, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it, in several cases, it was like fully half the magazine in some cases, because literally this was the thing keeping all these publications afloat.
You're welcome.
And paying for, and paying for freelancers like me at the time, by the way, to like sell articles to. So the law changed. Suddenly, profiting off the avails of sex work became illegal, and all of these newspapers realized that they were the work they were doing
get
was
these
illegal.
Fucking pimp
now.
Writers. Out of my newspaper.
Yeah, exactly. So all of these periodicals, they couldn't take the ads anymore. Like they couldn't accept them. So they all lost their primary sources of income, and they all folded. The end. Like, that's it. So all of these sort of, so in terms of like, we're seeing these platforms be, and the infrastructure of the internet being chipped away at. And it's like, oh, what's going to happen? I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Like, the exact same thing that happened to all of this print is that it's eventually going to collapse and fold, because ultimately it's a sacrifice legislators have shown they're willing to make.
And it's well, the ironic part of this is, you know, part of this is the tech lash. It's everyone's pissed off at Facebook, Google, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The only companies that are going to be left standing at the end of this are going to be Facebook, Google, Twitter, et cetera,
the major
et cetera.
Media conglomerates will determine what is art and what is sex, and you will pay $40 a month to watch and all movies owned by Disney.
Male nipples only.
I'm sorry. I did point at you. I'm sorry. No, you're not the Riddler. Are you the Riddler? No. Okay.
No.
Yeah, this person.
So I was curious, does anybody have any information about this topic with public health as an issue for lobbying and that type of policy? Because HIV criminalization laws, we have a terrible one that's still on the books here in Georgia. Usually when we advocate to try to get people's attention for decriminalization here, we're trying to ally ourselves. And so the reason I thought this panel sounded interesting was because it is like a public health issue when you're appealing to people in the legislature, I would think. I don't know the history.
No, absolutely. I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I don't know why I'm mirroring your accent back at you. I don't have a Southern accent. I can only speak for myself, but I consider harm reduction to be an umbrella that like sex work and substance use both fall under, and I'm like super passionate. If you ever want to talk about the opiate epidemic and how this is related to sex work and how criminalizing street-based existence is absolutely related to sex work, I think that is actually an edge that we can work with, and that I have, as a policy advocate, I've been in rooms with people where like that's kind of where they start to get it, because if you can understand that a lot of the problems associated with opiate use is the conditions under which they're done. You know, do people have clean needles? Do people have condoms? Are there safe injection sites? So those things, it's the conditions under which drug use is done that makes it as deadly as it is. I am not saying do heroin. That is a big difference. But that is actually a different policy perspective. Do heroin versus if you're going to do heroin as safely as possible. And so I think there is a ton of overlap there. I see a lot of sex worker advocates feeling very strongly about those things. And I do see lobbying happening at the same time with that.
And I think that's why this first bite question is such a problem for me. The idea that we have here, again, the whole idea of the canary is the canary is the first one down. But the canary's not the last one down, unless you're smart enough to get out of the fucking coal mine. If you don't get
really
out of the coal
breaking
mine,
down this metaphor here.
Yeah, I mean, in case you weren't clear on how it works.
And that's when you have to get in the coal cart.
But no, I mean, the problem is we're clearly not smart enough to get out of the fucking coal mine. We're still going down this road.
Yeah.
And the issue that we have is what we're doing is removing access to information. Right now we're removing access to information in a certain segment of the population, but there's no reason that's not going to go further and go further and go further. As we start biting away at our freedoms, we're taking more and more information and access away from people. And right now, again, today's panel is about sex work, and that's a real critical issue in what's happening right now. But drug use, HIV,
It's really easy to dehumanize criminals.
I mean, everything
that's why we call people criminals. That's why Donald Trump is so fucking hellbent on convincing everyone in America that all Mexicans are criminals. Mm-hmm. Because if all Mexicans are criminals, if all immigrants are criminals, then, like, it's okay to do these totally unacceptable things in detainment. Okay. So if sex workers are criminals, if drug users are criminals, well, then if we die, it's our fucking fault.
That's right.
You know, we shouldn't have been a drug using whore. Oops. Anyway, next question.
Segway.
I wanna clarify, this person is not dressed as the Riddler. This person is wearing an amazing dress.
I don't know what it is, but it's
horror.
Awesome.
Is it like classic horror? It's
really
cool.
Love
it. I'm into it.
Well, thank you. I think like you've answered sort of a bit of my question with the harm reduction thing, but I'm an Atlanta native, like, so woo. Like, the insulting thing to me is, like, we actually have a human trafficking problem in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So my issue is, like, as a sex worker ally, like, one, what is the answer to actually combating human trafficking besides just decriminalizing actual legitimate sex work? And, like, on the ground, I mean, I know a lot of you aren't from Atlanta, but, like, who's backing this? Like, who's actually doing the real work to combat real human trafficking and not just, like, lash out at real sex workers and, like, legit, you know, consensual adult activity?
I can tell you one reason why it's really difficult to tell who is who in that situation is because if a nonprofit says we center sex workers, they're going to lose funding. They're not going to be able to get funding. Yeah, exactly. So don't, just because an organization doesn't say, like, you know, our main people that we support are sex workers, that doesn't mean that they're not. And that's what makes it so fucking hard to be a good ally. I'm so sorry that I don't have a better answer for this, like, locally. Nationally, I think looking at some resources that Survivors Against SESTA shared, I know GLITS in D.C., I know Casa Ruby in D.C. as well are both organizations that really help. Because, you know, if we're going to be totally honest, there's people who are doing sex work because they have no other options. And that is a gray area that this kind of legislation does not leave room to have conversations about. But there are people doing that work, trying to, like, keep people as safe as possible. I would start with Survivors Against SESTA and look at things from there. Elizabeth Nolan Brown's, I keep plugging her, but Laura Lemoon is actually a real, LauraLemoon, is another really amazing activist who has written a lot about this. So I would look at kind of what other folks have said. I do want to name that it's 1102. So we will not judge you if you have other sick parties to go to, but I am personally happy to answer a couple more questions.
Anna, please.
Yeah, Jeno.
Yeah.
All right.
I ain't going anywhere.
Hi. So going back to what was mentioned at the beginning with, you know, the token white male guy. So I also am a token white male.
Greetings, token white male.
Hello, other white male.
What white male are you dressed as? Are you Obi-Wan?
I'm just some random.
Just some, just, okay.
Yeah. No,
thank
but
you, boneheads.
The boneheads have better parties to go to.
Yeah.
So I recognize that I am at the top of a lot of these power dynamics. And I was wondering if there, besides going to town halls and stuff, are ways that I can use those dynamics for advocacy or as a mouthpiece for sex workers who might be afraid of showing their face or coming out or doing things without being appropriative.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I could say the same thing about being a white person who is often talking about things that are, like, they do not affect me as much as they affect my black and brown siblings. So I think we're all, on some issues, we are all allies trying to figure out what's the difference between lifting voices, passing the mic. I think passing the mic, thinking about it in terms of, like, what can I do that I'm not, you know, speaking up unnecessarily, but that I'm actually lifting voices. Literally retweeting us is so important. So many of us are shadow banned, which means that, like, if you go to search us, you have to have, I don't know what my situation is right now, but it used to be you had to have spell my entire at out in order for it to pop up. I don't show up in, like, if I use, like, hashtag DragonCon, like, I don't show up because who knows what I might be posting. And so just boosting us for stuff is really actually super, super helpful. And I think the flip side of that is when it is appropriate for you to speak up is when you're with people that you know and trust and that you know they have good intentions, but they say something that you're like, whoa, that dead hooker joke came out of left field. just speaking up with people that you do feel like you're on the same level as, or like you're comfortable enough challenging, because there is just a really shocking amount of whorephobia that is considered socially acceptable, and like challenging other challenging creators, I think, is a great thing for white dudes to do, because nobody's gonna be like, feminazi! Like, nobody's gonna come back at you and just be like, whatever, it's because you're on your period.
You might get white knighted. A cuck.
Yeah. If the worst thing that's gonna happen to you is that you get called a cuck, that, you know, DM me and I'll send you some titties for free to make up for it.
Compliment on the house. No, seriously though, the Overton window. So if anyone knows the concept of the Overton window, the Overton window is a term we use in policy, which it describes what is the range of acceptable discourse in policy. What is the range of the possible in policy? So you started seeing, you know, one of the big upshots of the Democratic primary in the 2016 election, Bernie Sanders, was, you know, and I'm only my own politics out of this, but like, we got to talking about things like, should we maybe start talking about making college free? Should we start talking about actual single payer healthcare systems? And that those are conversations that 10 years ago wouldn't have happened. I don't think we're anything close to it yet. I think we're starting to nudge in that direction about talking about sex work, especially in an intersectional way when it talks about criminal justice reform, which is having a real hot moment right now. And I hate the fact that I have to describe it as a hot moment.
So hot right now, criminal justice reform.
So hot. No, but there's a lot of intersectional thinking, and some of it is just people grappling with issues for the first time and literally developing a vocabulary to talk about it in a way that other folks can understand. But honest to God, just doing exactly what Jinx said, like talking to people about it, amplifying voices of sex workers, bringing, you know, making it a normal part of the conversation that people aren't, you know, people don't get squeamish about talking about the existence of sex work.
Yeah, be like, yo, I went to Dragon Con and went to this panel about sex work, and like, you know, here's did you know, did you know that you can be charged with trafficking for bringing your friend to fucking work? Like, that kind of shit is, I can't stop swearing, I'm so sorry, I'm tired. But yeah, that is all like really, really helpful stuff. Just like having conversations with people, because you also never know, we are all around you. Sex workers are all around you all the time. What's up, I love you. hello. I want
much
everybody,
like
everybody here, especially the allies, especially if you've never done sex work, really loud round of applause for everybody who has ever done sex work right now. Woo! I see you and I love you and you're really important. Do we want to take any more questions? Oh,
yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Greetings.
So I don't know the extent to which this is a useful on-the-spot question, so maybe my question ends up being, if you're willing to follow up with me in the near future on this question, but... So, and I don't know how it works in other states, but in California, the Democratic Party has this thing with the Democratic Party platform, which they agree upon at the convention, and that all the Democrats in California are supposed to actively work towards, working on that platform. A good friend of mine has ended up in the position of being the lead of the free speech and internet plank of that platform, and has asked me to file testimony on behalf of FOSTA-SESTA issues, because he didn't know anything about them until I started ranting at him about it when I found out that he was on this thing about a week ago. and this thing contains, as of 2018, contains incredibly vague and arguably vanilla things like advocate for greater privacy protection and the protection of personally identifiable information for law-abiding internet consumers. But honestly, do not feel when I read it
internet
has a lot of things. It didn't really feel like there was that much free speech issues in it, and particularly things that would affect sex workers. And so again, I will rehedge. Does not feel like a great on-the-spot question, considering it requires reference material that you likely haven't read. But what is the change you would want to see made to this text that is on my screen?
I think that something that you could do with that would be, like, are you on Twitter?
Yeah, I actually have, like, 500,000 followers on Twitter.
Oh, my God. Holy okay. Right. So you have way more followers than I do. But it's only because I'm shadow banned. It's not because I'm not hotter than you. So, so I feel like something that would be really, like, shit goes around sex worker Twitter like wildfire. because we know that unless we retweet it, it's not going to get retweeted. So my suggestion for that is to get a wider variety of responses to set up some kind of like secure way that people can give responses to that and then put that shit on Twitter because sex workers love Twitter. So, yeah. Yeah. And so then you can
even if I understood, you're suggesting a like anonymous comment.
Yeah, why don't you come up after? Yeah. Just come up after and we'll talk about it.
Cool.
But yeah, I think an anonymous comment thing would be the most, you know, democratic way to get a wider variety of responses. Five more minutes.
Anybody else?
Who would like the cube?
Come on, we got 5 minutes. Don't leave us hanging. Up.
We will literally just...
There's
it. Oh, there it is. No, I saw this. The enthusiasm with which the person in the back jumped up.
Seat.
I did love that.
Well, then we should end with him, right?
We'll end with him. Yeah. We'll end with him. We don't assume people's pronouns.
We'll end
with the jumper.
Hi.
Hi.
So you said people should support sex workers, hire sex workers. Yeah. Tumblr's dead. Backpage is dead. Craigslist personals are dead. So how do people do that in a way that is safe for the workers involved?
Right. And that's something that like a lot of us are struggling with right now because as capitalism is wont to do, things that had been affordable for some people got way more expensive after this happened. So like Backpage got cut out and one service, which is known as Eros, got like way more expensive to the point where it's like, you know, hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars to post an ad. Yeah. So try posting an ad in LA for like a month and it's like, okay, well, that's like rent, dude. That's a lot of fucking money. So I would say the one thing that people are really using right now is called Tryst, T-R-Y-S-T. Like I have a Tryst profile, so you can find me there. Wink, wink. So Tryst.link is an Australian service that was... brought about by the same people who actually created Switter, which is if you know what Mastodon is. Okay, so it's a Mastodon instance that is sex work specific. So Switter, it's like Twitter, but sex work. Switter, Tryst.link. There's a lot of other stuff like Private Delights, Adult Directory, Adult Look, GFE Monkey is a scraper site that will steal all your photos and then put it under an account that says GFE Monkey, which I just think is very silly. But like, a lot of us are struggling with like, okay, how do I improve my SEO? Like, how do I do that? And like, we're all getting delisted at the same time. So it's like, I'm like reading like, oh, how to like, you know, increase your activity on Instagram so that I can get more engagement, but my shit's gonna get blocked anyway. And then I'm like, it's 5 hours later, there's 2 likes on it. And I'm like, why am I listening to this business podcast? Like, this is not... doesn't actually have anything to do with my life. So I wish there was a better, faster answer. But right now, Tryst.link is a good one because they actually offer like different payment plans. So, you know, people who have different levels of what they can afford can use it. But Twitter, honestly, there's a lot of sex workers on Twitter. Jumper.
Yay.
Yeah.
Woo.
So a few months back, I had a desire to create a Twitter account that was strongly dissociated from my identity, and I tried to
speak closer to the box.
A Twitter account that it was strongly dissociated from my identity, and I basically concluded that it was impossible. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that.
I think he does.
Now, when you say that it wasn't, you wanted it to be disconnected from your identity, you didn't want to have to do verification, you didn't want to have to use your normal email address. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, basically.
Okay.
My real phone number, not my real email address, and through Tor.
Okay. And through Tor. Yeah, that one's the kicker. Yes, gentleman who looked like you very much wanted to answer that question.
It is possible.
Ooh. Oh.
Man, one, don't try Tor. Two, get a solid VPN like Mulod.
Like, what was the recommendation?
Mulod. M-U-L-L-A. I can't spell the rest of it.
Question mark.
Google will figure it out. But you can get the VPN through a Bitcoin, which isn't really anonymous, but that's another story altogether. Using Tor, get the VPN, set up in a virtual machine, use that in order to actually cook up without actually going through Tor to Twitter. Twitter still will try very hard to make you accessible, but there are ways around that as well. At the end of the day, though, don't use Tor to try and get a queer account because it will fail.
Well, the other thing, don't use Tor to do crimes, y'all. Like, I know that's what you think it's for, but, like, it's just going to make them realizing that you're doing crimes. Like, that's kind of what all my friends who have much better security culture than I do say. But I think that this person brings up a really valid point, which is that even if you don't have like a literal crime that you are trying to hide, it is extremely difficult to operate without your personal information constantly. For the amount of like compromises I had to make in my life to like get an iPad that has my personal email and work stuff on it, like the number of like my own rules that I had to break to just fucking function with one device instead of buying two goddamn iPads was ridiculous, and I still have to verify stuff with my real name like all the time. So, you know, I think it's really a poignant question to be like, oh, hey, I can't help but notice that, you know, we're standing here in the internet room as the walls close in on us and our faces are scanned. Is that okay? And the answer is no, that is not okay. So we need to listen to sex workers when sex workers are like, no, for real, you guys, this is not okay. This is a very scary time. But fortunately, people give many shits or you wouldn't be here. I am so, so grateful to see you all. You just sat through an hour and 15 minutes of people talking about the law at 10 p.m.
Nerds.
On a Friday. So thank you so much.
Oh, I also want to mention that we are covering, not directly, but indirectly covering Sesta Foster with the Tumblr, Too Sexy for Tumblr panel again tomorrow night. I mean, that's kind of the other end of this abomination is what's going on with Tumblr and everything like it. That covers, Sesta Foster is the real reason behind it, but it also covers the problems with AI, machine learning, and what an awful mess that is.
And actually, Scott, if you can just talk about the idea of the AI and this chipping away at the idea of internet liability is going to be on the EU. When's the EU panel? The EU copyright articles.
I'll have to look that up.
Sometime tomorrow.
I know it's sometime tomorrow. Five, six, yeah,
it's
five.
It's an action.
Sometime tomorrow evening.
It's an action packed
weekend.
Thank
you so much, folks.
Yeah, thank everyone for coming out.
Thank you all so much for being here. I can't even tell you how much it means to me.
And special shout out to Jinx, by the way.
Yes.